This is Digital Dave.
And I'm still Fast Eddie.
And this is Yay Radio, and we are joined by the crew of Orbis. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Okay, my name is Hal Biestek. I'm one of the captains on Orbis. I'm the one that flew the airplane in. So if it was a good landing, I made it. If you thought it was a bad landing, it was the co-pilot.
Now, that's always a question I like to ask. When you're coming in on final and you realize, you know, this is Oshkosh, and you see all those people standing along the flight line, are you thinking, boy, I better do a good one here or what?
Well, I was thinking I better do a good one, but you don't think I had my eyes open, do you?
Okay.
You don't think I was watching. Yeah.
Why is this turning into an episode of Airplane?
Oh, yeah. Actually, Hal called me up that morning before they took off out of Memphis, and he was reading the NOTAMs and the ILS is out. Of course, he's a big airplane pilot, right? So the ILS is out. He started going, holy man, the ILS is out. He says, how about the VASIs? And I was over with Joe Schumacher, and Joe says, hey, if he can't land that thing clear in a million, he says, we need to get a new captain.
Well, you know, put it in perspective now. We're talking about an airplane that weighed over 180 tons when we land. It's an 8,000-foot runway. So big airplanes like big runways.
I was going to say, you're saying that's close.
That's close.
You could squeak it in.
Yeah, you know, it's certainly doable, but we prefer that long ILS.
All right. Well, here's the interesting part of it all. I did watch Orbis land, and it was beautiful.
Oh,
and
good. I did it.
Yeah. Who didn't know that was coming? But the one thing I did notice was when you kicked into reverse thrust, man, there was dust flying everywhere.
Yeah, he's cleaning the runway.
He's cleaning the runway for us.
There was a lot of brown dust flying, wasn't there?
Yeah, that's what Bruce was saying. He said, you clean the runway for them, and so they don't need to hire a sweeper now.
Well, as long as you're not picking up any kind of boulders out there, you're okay.
Well, I imagine you've had some very interesting landings. You're going into places that aren't really normally accommodating DC-10s.
Yeah, interesting is a good word. I like that. Yeah. But, you know, interestingly enough, though, the places we go into, because of the size of the airplane and the support that we require, most of the runways we go into are fairly good, and we'll generally go into one of the larger cities in a country, even though it's an underdeveloped country. We'll go into one of the larger cities, but most of the time, they have an ILS. Most of the time.
Yeah, we're running into probably our biggest problem is no ground equipment, nothing to tow you. So you have to really be careful, and also the runways generally are long enough and wide enough. The problem is parking and taxiways. Generally, there's in a lot of cases, you have to turn around on the runway. And as we said the last time, the turn radius of this airplane, just the gear, not the wingspan or the engines, just the main gear, is 144'3" on the best day. So on the 150-foot wide runway, you got to turn around on it because there's no taxiways. That's probably one of the more challenging things. And with the experienced pilots we got, it's a good thing to have that experience.
It's a good thing to experience.
I had to turn that thing around.
Well, I did have one person came up and said, you know, when you turn that airplane around, I was sure you could run off into the grass.
Yep. So that's the other thing, parking spots and getting off the runway.
Well, the part that I keep forgetting is that you're going out into these third world nations, and I keep thinking, yeah, they're going to land a DC-10 on a dirt strip. And
you can land one once.
Once.
Yeah. Yeah, it is capable of landing on a dirt strip. It's just not capable of taking off again.
There you go.
We have had them try to tow us across. We were towing one time, and they told us they were bringing us over to an area there, and we got halfway there, and they were going to pull us onto a dirt road. I said, stop. You know, I mean, some places just, they do a lot of things we just don't do.
Well, I guess they have no concept how heavy that airplane is.
No, and I've refused to put it in places. We've put either 4x8 sheets of plywood under the wheels or steel plates to keep it from sinking in. You know.
That brings up a question. I would have expected that this airplane, when flying, is lighter than a DC-10 in standard passenger configuration, but that is not the case.
No, in fact, it's even heavier. Sitting out there with, if you were to put all our equipment, because if people go by the airplane over there, you'll see all this ground equipment on the ground. That's actually the ground equipment that sits inside the airplane. The other thing is the hospital itself has been built into the airplane, STC'd by the, an STC authorizes to put it in there. But things like in the OR, when you go see the OR, the microscope, you're doing microscopic surgery, so the floor can't give. If anybody's walked on the floor of a commercial airliner before, you can feel every once in a while that floor gives a little bit. We actually have the floor has about five to eight layers of honeycomb Nordam aluminum bonded together to keep the floor right underneath the microscope real rigid so it doesn't move. So the airplane is heavier. It sits over there at about 305,000 pounds with no fuel on it. So we can't even put a full load of gas, even if we wanted to. So it reduces our range and some other things just because of that.
I bet there's been a couple of nights when you said, boy, I sure could have used that extra fuel.
Definitely here not too long ago. We were actually in, last year we were in, we were over in the Middle East area when Cairo, Egypt had some issues, then in Syria and then Libya. And we had flown in, we had tankered in, and that's another issue that we sometimes run into is we don't have, we can't purchase fuel or we can't upload fuel because they don't have a single point refueling connection. So we can't do over-the-wing refueling. Who's going to put 100,000 pounds of gas like a gas station, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Over the wing. Yeah, it takes forever, and there's no over-wing capability in the DC-10. So we were supposed to tanker fuel in, and all of a sudden things started to fall apart in that part of the world. And we got down, of course, knowing that, remember when I say this statement, we have to have alternates. And when I say we were short on gas, it still included the alternates. But we basically got down to a point where we had to have a headwind to be able to make the takeoff, to be able to get off the ground with enough fuel to make the next location. So we had like 6 minutes of spare fuel over and above the alternate requirements that are required by the FAA. But it does get tight once in a while.
Yeah, it's not unusual to sit somewhere and say, you know, if the temperature goes up one more degree, we can't take off. So, and sometimes I flew one mission where we had to go to a refueling stop. We had to be airborne from that refueling stop by 7 o'clock in the morning. Otherwise, it'd be too hot to take off. So which meant we had to leave the previous place at 2 o'clock in the morning. And you know how pilots feel about getting up flying at 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
Just like radio people, we don't like doing it.
Oh, I thought it was the other way around. We're used to being in rooms with no windows, so it really doesn't make a difference.
Yeah. Well, it sounds very interesting. What about maintenance on the airplane? Do you have any problem getting parts or mechanics to work on this thing when out of country, say?
We carry a lot of spare parts with us, and we have two full-time mechanics on the airplane. So we are pretty much capable of handling most minor difficulties. But Bruce is our director of operations. He probably has more information on the what we carry on the airplane, because I'm afraid to get down there, it's too dark.
We do, and as he said, we do have two mechanics that have basically been on DC-10s their entire life. They started with United Airlines, spent more than 30 years with them, and of course they were there when they received the DC-10. So they each got about 35, 40 years on the DC-10 themselves. So good mechanics. But then we do carry a great deal of parts. We carry spare tires, spare ADIs. We basically went through the minimum equipment list on the airplane that render if that piece of equipment were to go bad, we could not fly. So then we go down and look at historically what sort of either needs repaired or breaks more often, and that's what we carry on the airplane. Every once in a while, we do run into a scenario. We were passing going from Africa over to Dalian, China, or Harbin, China, excuse me. We gassed a fuel stop in Oman, went in for there, and we broke a valve that we didn't have on the airplane. But fortunately, through our network in the aviation industry, we were able to find FedEx had a valve in their warehouse. They had actually had 16 throughout the world. But the question I had was, do you have one in Dubai? And they had one in Dubai. I called up somebody I knew in Dubai. They called up the mechanic. He said, can you pull that and can you get it to me? They had a truck that drove, but it was going to be like 10 hours later before it ever even left. And then 10 hours after that, I said, I can't wait. They went down to an airline, threw the valve on an airline, sent it over to Oman, and the airplane was back on flying status within 10 hours of the actual event taking place. So we have a huge network of people that help us throughout the industry, and we're able to repair stuff, even when we don't have it, in fairly remote places in the world.
Well, that's good. I imagine, aside from engines are a whole other animal.
Yeah, they sure are. We've you know, throughout our history, we've had a couple situations where it came up in the engines and called up GE. We did a borescope one time, found a crack in a turbine section at one point. But we called up GE, sent the pictures. You know, we did a borescope, sent the pictures. GE says, hey, it's out of, you can fly it 10 more cycles. You know, you're fine. So we'd fly it somewhere where we change the engine. So
there you go. Yeah, I don't think you want to be running around with cracks in turbines. That's bad.
Yep. But again, the manufacturer, when they come out there and they put their name on it, says that engine will be fine, go ahead and fly it back to a location, and they tell us what we can do. And again, we don't do anything that's illegal. We follow all the rules. At the same time, I think we've been somewhat fortunate at Orbis. Some of the people say, somebody higher up is looking out for us, because we sure are fortunate. We landed in Honolulu last year, and on the way across the Pacific, and we had a landing gear indicator that went out, and a guy from one of the airlines walks up, and he says, "Hey, I saw this thing on the news just randomly. Saw it parked there. Can I look at it?" And I just asked the question. You said you wouldn't happen to have, because we didn't have it. I said, "You wouldn't happen to have a landing gear indicator, would you?" And we pulled it out, said the part number. He called it under the shop, and he had a smartphone and has a supply system on it. They had that part, believe it or not, for a 41-year-old DC-10 in Hawaii. You know, I mean, what's the odds?
Really? That's how old the airplane is? 41 years?
Yes, it's the oldest DC-10 left in the world flying. It's the number two serial number off the, it's the number two ship built. It was the McDonnell Douglas test airplane. So it's got some good aviation history in it.
And, it sure does.
And then a lot of modifications. So if you're a future engineer out there, or a mechanic, or a pilot, you can see what actually can be put in an airplane with an SDC and some engineering.
And even though it's the second DC-10 ever built, and the oldest one flying, it's the lowest flying time DC-10 in the world.
That's
it's got the fewest hours on of any DC-10 anywhere in the world still flying.
So it's really had a easy career. It must never have gone into airline service then.
It was operated by Laker Airways for a while. After McDonnell Douglas finished the DC-10 run, then Laker Airways bought it, Freddie Laker, and he's the one that put most of the flying time on it. So it was in passenger service for a while.
But fairly low time. We picked it up in 92. So we've had it, and then since we've had it, we haven't even put 1,000 hours on it in 20 years. It only flies about 100 hours a year, because its primary job is actually a hospital. It just happens to have wings, but its primary purpose is a hospital, as you two know.
So essentially what you've got here is a 41-year-old late model low miles beauty.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and if you go over there in the Phillips 66 area there over there in spot 491, you'll see it looks pretty doggone good. We've kept it up. We've stripped it and repainted it when it needs it. We've kept the work up on it.
They took the 8-track player out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it does have the upgrades to fly in today's current airspace, but when you look at the instruments, that looks old, but if you look carefully, you'll see TCAS, and the enhanced GPS is in there, GPWS is in there, and so it still has the capability of flying any airspace we have.
It's been great having you guys.
We've been listening to Bruce Johnson and Hal Bistak from Orbis. They're over on Phillips 66 Plaza. Go on over there and check it out. It's not very often we get a flying hospital that's 41 years old on our property, so check it out.
Can I say one more thing about Orbis real quick?
And sure, sure.
We're totally privately funded, and we get no government money or anything else like that. We are a private charity, and so if you feel generous, you want to give part of your paycheck, come on over.
It sounds like they told you they couldn't make your paycheck this week. Ah,
well,
just kidding.
Yeah, but
pilots fly it for free, and look at us up at orbis.org there, please.
Yeah.
There
very
you
good.
Go.
Very good.